It's an interesting article that was sent through to me by email, and in that article it says the following, and I think that it's, I don't see any reason to doubt it. It says, up until December the 25th, 2004, close to 300 natural and man-made catastrophes around the world had been registered this year. Now, I want you to notice, up to the December the 25th, now the tsunami was December the 26th, so this was until before the actual tsunami struck. They reckon 300 natural and man-made catastrophes around the world had been registered this year, claiming the lives of more than 21,000 people. Now, exactly where they draw these lines, I don't know, but this is what is being said. Almost half were in Asia or Africa, causing total or economic damage of approximately $105 billion, up from over $65 billion in 2003. So that's a 50% jump. The average annual loss over the last 10 years has been $70 billion. So even looking at the average annual one over the last 10 years, they're looking on whatever statistics they're using here, they're looking at $70 billion, and it's gone up to $105 billion. So you're looking at, let's say, about a 50% jump in these natural and man-made catastrophes around the world. And then we had the tsunami, which just wiped all statistics completely off the map. And you're looking at, in that one disaster, something like 150 million people, and you're looking at probably near enough a quarter of a million. Sorry, 150,000. And you're looking probably at about a quarter of a million, 250,000. Now today what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk a little bit about a recent trip, but I want to do it in the context of survivors, because we've just been, every time we switch on our television on the news anyway, you're looking at survivors, you're looking at stories of survivors in one way or another. And in these trips that we make, going abroad to see different groups who have been formerly part of the Worldwide Church of God, we're looking at survivors. And we're looking at a devastation that actually took place. And you can think, well, really it lessens the impact of the tsunami disaster. But no, because what we're looking at surviving here, in the case of the church groups that we actually come in contact with, we're looking at spiritual survival, which is even more important. Because the physical survival of these individuals that survived the tsunami and survived the other catastrophes around the world, they will live again. Those that die, but there are going to be some that may even have missed out eternally within this absolute chaos that we've witnessed within the church. I want to deal with four areas, and certainly you can see these four areas when you look at what had happened in the recent tsunami. I want to talk about foundations, first of all. Secondly, I want to talk about getting the overview, because, you know, people that managed to get into the over the upper whatever, whether it was an upper of a tree or upper of a house or on higher ground, managed to survive. And thirdly, I want to talk about reading the warning signs, because when we go around and we talk to people, we see these three areas highlighted in many cases. In the case of foundations, certainly when you're looking at the tsunami, you're looking at, say, a boat, people that survive. You've got people that survived by being on a boat out in the sea, and they had a foundation of the boat underneath them. You can look at somebody who managed to cling onto a tree that had its foundations in its roots, and it was strong enough to withstand the onslaught that came through. Or somebody that literally got up to higher ground and was standing on something higher than the tsunami that came through. But you turn over to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. Spiritually also, foundations are crucially important. And here in Matthew chapter 7, Christ brings this out. And it's something we all need to take to heart and keep in mind. And certainly as we come across these smaller groups, we do find that people are hanging on to the foundations that they have there. Here in Matthew chapter 7, down in verse 21, it says, "Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, is going to enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that does the will of my Father that's in heaven." You know, there's an awful lot of church groups, church people, that say Lord, Lord, and acknowledge the sovereignty, and yet they don't. It says, many will say in that day, Lord, Lord, haven't we prophesied in your name, and in your name cast out demons, in your name done many wonderful works? And then I'll profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you that work iniquity. That we're going in a certain direction. This is Matthew chapter 7, now verse 24. Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them. So these words that he was talking about in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, specifically giving the new administration that was to be used. He says, hears these sayings of mine and does them, are like a wise man that built his house upon a rock. Some of these pictures that we see coming out of Asia, we see utter devastation all the way around. I remember seeing one, the devastation was complete all the way around, but there was a mosque in the middle. You ever seen that one? The mosque in the middle, obviously it had something, it had a foundation, or something was enabled that mosque to survive. And you look at this, a lighthouse, you put a lighthouse out on a rock somewhere, it actually, the foundation is crucial. It's bolted, I think, onto the rock, or somehow held onto that rock very firmly. And then, as you actually build it, you lock each part of the granite, I think they actually make lighthouses out of, and they lock each stone together as they build the lighthouse up. He says, whoever hears the sayings of mine and does them are likened to a wise man that built his house on a rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on the house, and it didn't fall because it had this foundation. And everyone that hears these sayings of mine and doesn't do them will be likened to a foolish man that built his house on the sand. And the rains came, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. So it is the foundation. It is the foundation of the word that is delivered to us, the word of God through Jesus Christ, through the one who is leading his church. And this is what we find as we go around. The last Sabbath, we were in Tennessee. Here's a little group of people in Tennessee who don't have a minister, who have gone through certain groups, and yet they're holding fast. Why? Because they're playing Mr. Armstrong's tapes over and over again, and they're basically hanging on to that foundation. And it is a crucial thing that we find as we do go around. Even though it's a very small group, you're looking at six baptized adults plus children and spouses, about 15 people altogether. But the foundation is a crucial thing. And the foundation, as I say, last Sabbath we were there, we were preaching in that, I was preaching in that that particular congregation. It's also very important to get the overview, to get above the situation. That's the second point I want to deal with. Because in the tsunami, it wasn't enough just to cling to a tree, on the bottom of a tree, because the chances are you'd just be ripped completely off. You had to get up high. You had to get above the situation. The boat, if the boat was on the bottom of the, was turned upside down, that didn't do you any good. You had to ride above it. And this also is something that we need to recognize in the spiritual realm also. If you go over to John chapter 6, about these words that Christ was mentioning over here in Matthew 7, he then mentions about these words, and notice what he says on John chapter 6. It said, in verse 63, he says, it's the Spirit that makes alive. That's John 6, 63. It's the Spirit that makes alive. The flesh profits nothing. But the words that I speak to you, they are spirit and they are life. These are getting above the physical realm. It's not just the physical words that you listen to. You've got to get to the heart and core. The foundation is a spiritual heritage. And this also is something that if we're going to survive into the future, there's something that we all have got to understand. It is a spiritual dimension to all of these things. But there are some of you that do not believe, for Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed and not, and who that should betray him. And he said, therefore I said to you that no man can come to me except it's given to him of my Father. So this spiritual aspect, this spiritual dimension must come from God himself. This is another thing that we see as we journey round, that there is a certain bond with people, and a certain bond that we notice as if we've known people all our lives, and yet we've maybe only been with them maybe a matter of days when we actually total up the amount of time. From that time, many of his disciples went back and didn't walk anymore with him. And then Jesus said to the 12, "Are you going to go away?" And Simon Peter answered him and said, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." This is something coming from the Spirit. And he actually says here, he says, "And we believe and sure that you are the Christ, the anointed one, where the Spirit is working." So he recognized not just the words, but the spiritual dimension that is there. The Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and went on a little bit more. You know, we're working out that with Bob and Debbie Evans, who we stayed with, was it 8 days that we've actually spent time with them? We didn't know them apart from this time last year when we went down to Florida and first came in contact with them. The Pippies, we've only known for about 6 months. We met them about 6 months ago physically. And yet it seems as if we've known John and Eileen Pippi for years. And yet it isn't. Why? Because there is a spiritual dimension in what we're involved in. And this is something else that we come across continually. As we go around, we come across this spiritual dimension. And there is a bond, a spirit bond that binds people. And it's something that we notice continually. And it is renewing that bond that is also very, very important when we do go around and talk to the different people, the different groups. There's another area as well, and that is reading the warning signs. The people that have, that we're coming in contact with have read the warning signs. I remember, again, looking at this tsunami as an example. There's a girl that I heard of that, in fact, we were talking about this girl in the hotel just earlier on, that actually noticed the sea disappear off the beach. And there are other cases where people had seen the sea disappear off the beach, knew what that meant, in other words, that there was a tsunami coming, and that is the thing that you notice. I mean, Philip was talking about satellite from space, the island suddenly doubles in size, and the next frame, it's gone completely, and the next frame, all that's there is beach. And this, people read the signs. Animals read the signs. Animals can sense certain things. And people read the signs of certain natural disasters. This girl studying geography yelled at everybody to get off the beach because there was a tsunami coming. They ran off the beach, and a large number of lives were saved. I want to read you a letter that I received. And this gives you an idea. Because not only did we go down and see the people in Canada, or go up and see the people in Canada, and then go down to Tennessee, on our return, I got an email, and the email said the following. It says, "Mr. Bowles, I was just on your website, and I noticed that you gave the sermon in Tennessee." This was literally this last week. Okay, so the sermon was posted on the website, and this the email came through. "Where in Tennessee did you give the sermon? I live in Alabama, and if I'd known you were going to be in Tennessee, I'd have made the trip to see you. We listen to your sermons almost every week, 7 of us." A group I'd never even heard of before. "If you're ever in the South again, would you email me, please?" I got back to, this was the wife of one of the members there, and I said, "Look, give me a little bit more information, and I'll give you a link across to the member section." And I believe that she and her husband and so on maybe will be listening now. But as far as reading the warning signs, just listen to this catalogue on this email. It says, "We were going to WCG in about November 1994. We'd go to church and we'd try to program everybody. It would take about a week to get over our disgust. So finally, November 94, my husband told me that he just would not listen to their gibberish any longer, so we quit going." I mean, we're all in the same boat. We've all gone through this same scenario. "We bought some Bible tapes in 1984. That was 10 years before. They were King James dramatized Old and New Testaments, so we would have church services listening to these tapes." So that's how they basically separated completely. "In 1995, we went to Jekyll Island to attend the feast site at a large church site, another church site. The next year, in 96, we attended the feast site in Jekyll Island again. This time, 2 sermons were given, cutting down Mr. Armstrong, and that was it. No more of this particular group." It was being mentioned. Well, my mum and my sister and husband were attending another group, so we attended one service, read a particular booklet, and decided either we are wrong or they are, so we didn't attend there anymore. But you see the sifting process. Again, here is somebody going through the same process that you and I have gone through, but in slightly different ways. But it's the same story. We're continually coming across that people that are holding to the foundations are reading the signs as well. It's not just a case of holding to foundations and getting above, getting the kind of overview. So in November 96, we thought, well, let's go to this particular church. We attended for several weeks. Nobody seemed to get along much. People we'd known for many years seemed different, and to make a long story short, we therefore quit attending. The minister stated that Mr. Herbert Armstrong had sexual problems, and anyway, no more of this particular group. So, you know, this constantly being given all this kind of garbage. Then a formerly good friend of ours wanted to come over to our home for a visit. We said, okay. This was about late 1998. He was a member of another particular group. And he verbally said that we were doomed and that Mr. Armstrong wasn't really given all the truth, so that ended badly. So you see the sifting, you see the same process going through. He says, but something good did come out of the visit. His wife had bought the journal and she forgot and left it to our house. Now, I wouldn't quite say the journal is something good, because of all the nonsense that's in there, but it says, and from the journal we were able to receive a tremendous amount of Mr. Armstrong's sermon tapes and broadcasts, etc. And also as a result of the journal, I now had access to different stuff on the web. So that's about it. We've been listening to you for about a year and a half. Somebody we had no idea was out there at all, and yet for a year and a half they've been logging into the website, and as I said, well, they would have been in there when we went to Tennessee. But these people we only found out about when we came back. They are out there. You know, when I said in the sermon last week, I talked about maybe several thousand, I still believe that's what we're looking at. We're not looking at just this pitiful small group and the other small groups. We are looking at several people that God is working with. Turn over, final scripture, Revelation 3. Revelation 3, this sifting is taking place, and it's taking place for a particular reason, and the reason we find here in Revelation 3, this is what God is working towards. In verse 11 it says, behold, I come quickly, hold that fast which you have, that no man take your crown. It's the crown that is important. It is the job as teachers that we've got to be doing at that time. And it says, him that overcomes will I make a pillar in the temple. So it's not just a case of a crown. It does seem to be that the people who in fact put their foundations in place, or put the foundations and understand what those foundations are, that do have God's spiritual overview, that are reading the warning signs and are keeping, the only way they can do that is by being close to God, by getting on their knees and staying close to God, that they become a pillar in the temple of my God, it says, and he'll go no more out. So this sifting that has taken place over all these years with all of us, quite frankly, it will eventually come to an end. And as we go around and we see these people and we come across these small groups, there's another group that has got in contact with me, by the way, from the Philippines. And whether we'll manage to get down there before the feast or not, I don't know. But we're going to try and help them as far as the feast is concerned. They'll be logging in to us over here. So there's another site. they'll be actually logging in the evening for our morning service. So your mind works double time trying to sort it all out. But so that's another group. But they are out there, and it's our job to make sure that we do continue ourselves to provide for these people.